important sesshin called Rohatsu sesshin. And Rohatsu means the first week in December. Is that right, Jerome?
Eighth day
was yesterday. And this sesshin commemorates the awakening of the Buddha, of the historical Buddha. It said that after the Buddha woke up, he moved to another tree, a banyan tree. It was called a goat herder's banyan tree, and sat for another 7 days and kind of consolidated his experience. And so to this day, at this time of the year, all over the world, people come together and they do an intensive period of meditation and sit and wake up together. This year, as how many years have you been leading now?
When did you go to France to lead that session?
3 years ago.
So it's longer than that. No.
4 years.
At least 2008 was at least that long ago.
So 4 years ago.
4 to 5 years.
So at least four times Peter's been leading Rohatsu Sesshin and guiding us in silent practice. Nothing extra, just sitting and walking and eating. Very simple and pared down elemental practice that has been a great nourishment to us. Well, thank you again, Peter, for your help. So we were going to continue our chit-chat about practice. Is there anything you'd like to say?
Well, there's a lot of people who weren't involved in our chit-chat. Do we want to just let them figure it out? Or we? I thought one of the, when Tobin didn't have time to prepare a talk, or for some reason chose not to, he would ask if anybody had any questions. So this might, we could chit-chat, or we could ask, and there may be somebody out there who just has a question to ask. This might be ideal time to do it. And then otherwise, we could see where we go with it.
Okay. How about it? Does anyone have a question? Just one.
Don't worry about it being very basic, fundamental, newcomer. This Coben field, all types. And even the most fundamental questions are helpful to those who've been sitting for years, for decades.
Can I ask a question? Yesterday we talked about the practice being nothing special. And we also We also talked about the practice being a special situation, kind of like an emergency case. So, what about the practice being neither special, non-special? Or what about the practice being both special and not special? What do you think?
I think that eliminates the need for a lot of talk, which is what we've been doing all week.
I heard a good description of the middle way. Originally, the Buddha, some of you don't know, the Buddha came from a very affluent, he was basically a spoiled rich kid of his time. And he came from a very affluent and protected situation to he kind of reversed, and he went to a very severe, rigorous situation where he did what's called ascetic practices. So he went from one extreme to another, and from a very indulgent life to a very highly disciplined life. And when he one of his first insights, the insight that put him in the seat where he could actually wake up was to find a middle way, a middle ground, a way of balance or moderation, not too tight and not too loose. It included his deep wish or aspiration or for truth or understanding or completion, but it also included like acknowledgement and taking care of life as it presented itself to him, take care of his body. So he took some food. At that time he was doing fast, a lot of fasting, and he took some food, and he restored his energy. He took some fuel, and he felt better. And the friends that were with him said, "Oh, this guy's not serious anymore. We're not going to practice with him anymore." So they kind of deserted him. And he went, so he practiced, he went and practiced by himself. But the place where he came to sit down was a place of balance, a place of where he came to kind of the center of him, his whole experience. So the middle way, this middle way that he recommends is this way of taking care of the whole part of your life. We come to practice, and we come to meet truth, or we come to understanding, or we come to the way with a deep wish and aspiration. But if we just go there with our will or our ambition or our desire, we won't complete our work, because we won't have brought our whole self forward. So what Peter talked about yesterday about nothing special was the idea that Is that what I understood what you said, the idea that we do not differentiate this practice from our daily life, that we actually invite our daily life into this practice, all of it, all of our daily life into this practice, even our problems, and we invite our practice out into our daily life so that there's no seam, no edge, no border, so that it's nothing special. It's just picking up a cup of tea. It's just having a meal. It's just driving your car. It's just sitting down in Zazen. Nothing special. Everyday activity. The other aspect of the, besides being comprehensive in that way, the other aspect of the middle way is that it's the non-contradiction of opposites. So in our life, and opposites exist. I mean, we experience opposites, don't we? We experience pain and we experience pleasure and we experience special and we experience not special. And we experience male and female. We experience birth and death. We experience hunger and satiation. We have lots of opposites. So the middle way is also the non-contradiction of opposites. Opposites exist, but they don't necessarily contradict one another. So right in light, there's darkness. And right in darkness, there's light. Light and darkness are a pair, how does it go? Like the foot in front and the foot in back, walking. That's the middle way, too.
And these dualities are often referred to as two sides of one coin.
Nothing. Nothing is wasted. Special. And so maybe we can, the point I'm coming to is maybe we can have nothing special and special together. That's my question to you. Sorry it took so long.
Well, first of all, I have to make a verbal retraction when I brought up that the chapter of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, the nothing special chapter, I was mistaken. That chapter in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind refers to realizing one's enlightenment, realizing it. The enlightenment we all have, our Buddha nature, that after you realize it, it's nothing special. That was where that chapter title was. It didn't have to do with the chapter where Suzuki Roshi talks about somebody's thinking that when I'm sitting Zazen in the Zendo and my partner's at home sleeping in bed, that I think I'm doing something special and he or she is. That was a different chapter. So I'm just saying that by title, the nothing special needed to be, of course, somebody who knows Suzuki Roshi's Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, well, they know that I was mistaken. The other thing that came to my mind after our chat yesterday was Kobin did make a distinction in the in the samadhi that we encounter in everything we do, that we hope to be fully present in everything we do and realize samadhi in every mundane or non-mundane task. But he did refer to Zazen as king samadhi, that the samadhi that helps us realize that everything else is non-discriminated, non-differentiated. But once we realize that, then there's not one thing that's, like I say, preferential to another. It's they're all special and they're all not special. Everything we do is both special and not special. The middle way. We still together?
Yeah, I was just thinking. We could also say not special and not special.
Can I take this a step further?
Sure. Good.
We talked a bit about using Katagiri Roshi's Return to Silence, how often he talked about right here and right now, and that's when you shouted in my ear, still ringing. But once again, being present, the right here, right now, be here now, power of now, it carries this discussion we're having to another point, and that is, whatever it is we're doing, whatever it is that arises in front of us, that's all there is. Mm-hmm. And so there's no comparison to whether it's special compared to something else, because there isn't anything else. I mean, it's it, both special and not special. I mean, right now, this is it. There is no wife at home sleeping or cooking or whatever.
But there is the memory or the knowledge of the wife at home cooking.
Mm-hmm.
That exists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right now. I mean, if you're thinking about her right now.
But it is just something in the head. I mean,
which is?
If we really trust that there is, can we really put ourselves fully into the moment, as Tole says, as the portal, being fully present in the now, as the portal to the ephemeralness of life, that we don't get into the something, somebody, somewhere else in time or in space. That's what we do when we sit. We sit zazen. So this is all there is. There's just this posture and this breathing.
But if I could interject, what Peter's talking about is what's called shikan. Shikan, some people know the term shikan taza. Za means the zazen, and ta means to hit or to meet or to arrive with. But shikan is really an important word. Shikan means what you were just talking about. Shikan means just for itself, for just as it is, or just this, you said, just this. So it's sitting or this activity of practice not for any other purpose, but just for the experience itself, just for this shikan taza.
But does that apply only to zazen, or do we practice that just for in anything we do? Or everything we do?
I want to say that in that moment, this right now moment, there can be the experience of sensations. There can also be the experience of the mind stream. Your wife back home is in your mind stream. She's not here as a sensation that you're experiencing. It's like some discomfort in your knee or sound of a bird. So what's the difference? Is it all right here, right now, including the mind stream?
Go ahead. I mean, I think he's throwing that up to both of us.
To Peter?
The duality of you.
One time I was driving on Highway 50 through Nevada, and I stopped. I was really stiff from driving, and I stopped to do a little stretching. If anybody knows Highway 50, it's called the lonesomest highway in the world, and it's just magnificent. Beautiful. Yeah, it's just magnificent. It's so spacious. And you go through these expansive valleys. There's just a mountain range there and a mountain range there, and this vastness between it. And I stopped, and I was kind of pretty much practicing as I was driving, so I felt like I was pretty settled. And I did some stretching, and I looked around at the whole expanse of this vast basin or plain that's surrounded by mountains. And I realized I was, that I was, all this was my body. I had an insight that all that I could see was my body. The insight when something like this, I can see that way as far as that mountain range, and I can see that way as far as my mountain range. I have an eye organ. My eye organ sees. My eye organ and the scene and the object that I see are not separate. Therefore, all that I see is my body. And it was wonderful to forget for a moment the preconception that we have of being contained in this bag of skin. It was great. It was really great. But then, Brian, I thought, wait a minute. I know that over that mountain range, the road continues, and I'm going that way. And there's another basin, and I know that, so what about that knowing? Is that knowing also my body? And I came to the conclusion, yes, that knowing of that body, of that other place, that exists, even as an idea, mm-hmm. that's my body too. And so, in a sense, like, I expanded farther by knowing that there was another basin there, and knowing that there was Boulder, Colorado, which is where I was going, and that my friends were waiting for me, and my wife was, your wife was waiting for you at home, and that I have a history, and that if I walk outside the Zendo, there might be some trees to see. So I would say, yeah, it includes that stream. It thoroughly includes that stream. In fact, the stream has no limit. There's no limit.
It's the entire known universe.
Huh?
We can extrapolate it to the entire known universe. Because it's all we know.
That means you're the whole world, huh?
We are.
So there's no distinction. In Shikantaza, we're enjoying our mind stream as much as we're enjoying our not mind stream.
In some,
well, once again, it's a question to both, but I'll jump in and is that the point where we get words become difficult, and that's why we sit without words. But I think it. Sitting gets us away from the mind stream. Fortunately. Once again, that's not why we sit. We have no purpose in sitting. The Shikantaza, no gaining idea. No goals. But as a result, we pay less attention to all the stuff that our mind is doing, all it's producing. When we can let go, we begin to realize that the non-separation of everything, the unity that Mike felt when he looked out at Highway 50, all one, no separation. Quieting the mind is what naturally happens, and it's essential. It happens without our intending. If you try to intend to do it, it doesn't work. Like Katagiri Roshi said, when we put add a desire to whatever we do, whatever, whether it be zazen or psychology or philosophy or anything, when we add a desire to it, we get all confused. When we're fully intent on whatever we're doing, whether we're sitting zazen, cooking in the kitchen, and we're fully there without any goal, anything we expect to get from that, we just do it. We just do it. Then I think we find what we can no longer express in words. In words or in thoughts. As it says in the Heart Sutra and verses in the Faith Mind, the way is beyond words. So we're trying to talk about something that is beyond talking about. So like in that little parable, in once again, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, where the two monks are having a little Dharma battle, and the one says, then enough talk, let's have a cup of tea. Because you know, words only take us to a certain point in trying to grapple with what is beyond words.
Particularly in Shikantaza, which has no fixed abode, it has no specific focus, just as it has no goal or gaining idea, the mind stream is totally unimpeded. That means there's going and coming of thoughts, emotions, sensations, and you are just a swinging door, just the gate, coming and going. That's the way. It's totally unimpeded. There's breath, there's sensation, there's sound, there's birth and death, there's arising, there's going, there's dispersion. And you're just the host. You just sit with all things. That's the mind stream. That's everyday activity, everyday mind is practice. And that's lunch.
Saved by the bell.
Ding, ding. Before we go, in honor of you and the practice, I want to read the last part of, you talked of Kodosawaki, homeless Kodo, the last part of his poem, his wonderful poem called Shodoka. Some of you might know the Shodoka. Goes, the floating clouds of the five skandhas. People know skanda. Some people don't know skanda. Skandhas are the five kind of groups of components. One is form. One is sensation, or the other one is perception, and the other one is our cognizing,
impulses,
our tendencies to make stuff, mental thoughts, and also just consciousness itself. So it's kind of the five skandhas is like what happened, what we experience, what we are. So he says these floating clouds of the five skandhas, they just aimlessly come and go. And the bubbles of the three poisons, they arise and vanish. The three poisons are attachments, our aversions, and our ignoring. our ignorance. So we can imagine like looking at the surface of a water, and we see the reflections of the clouds on the water. Our what differentiates us, what makes us our life, and the bubbles of the our of these mistakes come up. So the poem goes, this is the end of the shloka. The floating clouds of the five skandhas aimlessly come and go. They just come and go. And the bubbles of these three poisons, they just arise and they just vanish. There is clear water all the way to the bottom. And the fish go lazily along in this vast ocean of life. A fish swims just as a fish. And in the vast sky, the bird flies free in the unbounded sky. So that's your guy. Yeah. Koto.
Our guy.
One more, can I say one more thing? There's no purpose to this practice. It's just for itself. But it, nevertheless, we can say it completes us. It's called Ji'i Kisha Muryoshin in Japanese. And this is a resultant or a fruition of the practice. So we just sit, we just come home to ourselves, we just practice with our body and mind just as it is. But one of the resultants is Ji'i Kisha Muryoshin. Jihi means complete loving, like the loving you would have for your only child. Complete loving. Muryo means giving thoroughly. Muryo, I mean, kihi kisha, and muryo means no limit. And shin is heart, mind. So one of the fruitions of this practice is that we can experience complete loving, complete concern and loving giving without limit in our body and our mind.